Welcome to our podcast,
Band BFFs,
the podcast where we make your music selection less complicated.
On today's episode, we are going to be discussing Heroes Triumphant by Willie Owens. Cheers to starting the conversation.
Well, this piece is absolutely awesome. I think it is a perfect, like, fanfare concert opener. It's a really great piece. It's super short. It's about 90 seconds in length, 4/4 throughout. Concert B flat. It does have quite a bit of accidentals. It's really fast, but you've got some flexibility in the tempo. Split clarinet parts and trumpet parts. The trombone and euphonium part are not always the same, so you want to be aware of that. Lots of percussion, and like Willie Owens often does, he does an advanced option percussion part or a regular percussion part. I love that.
So me
that
too.
You have the opportunity to differentiate for your percussionist. But there is a lot of other percussion involved. You need, I would say, 6 percussionists to be able to cover all of these parts well. And they are all pretty active throughout
like
the entire
piece.
Like,
you have to have a timpani part. The bells part is not always 100% doubling. It's kind
not
of by
all,
itself.
Yep.
Yeah. So you definitely need to have a good percussion section. Good sized. So it starts off in concert B flat, and it goes 138 to 152. So like Lara said, it's a short piece because it goes by really fast. It has a lot of style considerations too, just even right off the gate. 1 and 2 and with an accent and a slur. 4 and 1 and 2 and with accents and slurs again. And the accents don't always happen in the same spot for every instrument. So this has a lot of like little nuances
that
you have to really go into detail on with the kids. And like, you're going to accent on beat 1 and 2, but then the saxes are going to accent on beat 3, you know, and kind of explain like where people are in the importance.
And how that feels, right? Even in the very first measure, it goes through different sections where there's an accent on beat 2, an accent on beat 3, and an accent on beat 4.
Right.
And obviously, he's intentional writing that, so you've got to make sure that that comes across aurally as the kids are performing it, and that idea kind of carries throughout this whole thing.
Yep.
You need really good trumpets for this
you
piece
do.
Too. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's Heroes Triumphant,
right.
And it's like a fanfare,
right.
So I mean, I think that goes without saying, but the trumpets are featured front and center for most of this.
Yep.
The woodwinds get a bunch of flashy,
cute
moving
stuff.
Yeah.
So it starts out with just the woodwinds on measure 1. They have that accented motif that Laura and I just mentioned. And then the rest of the brass, minus the trumpets, come into measure 2 with a forte piano, and we're crescendoing to beat 1 of measure 3, where the trumpets come in with the melody. So they have the melody alone. They are in split parts. Both need to be heard equally. The horns kind of come in with a little bit of a counter melody-esque line underneath them, 3 measures into their melody, along with tenor sax. Woodwinds are continuing to do, like Lara said, little like flashy eighth notey type things. Then the trumpets get a C versus a D in the first trumpet, forte piano with a G and trumpet 2. So like, they really have to be able to hear their partials and their chord to make that be excellent. Lows get a little response, rest 2, 3, and 4, 1, and a tenuto and accents. So, oh no, they're all accents. Sorry, my eyes are getting old. All accents as they go lower, but they don't have like a super duper like important part. So your low brass just need to be able to articulate well.
Really, everybody needs to be able to articulate
that's
well,
true too.
Right? So, and I will tell you, when I have played this piece, I think it has the tendency to sound noisy if you don't balance and layer it correctly.
Mm-hmm.
The woodwind parts are so active, and they are not the same. Like the flutes are not doubling, you know, what's happening in the lower reeds or whatever. They're not all the same all the time. So you want the oboes are doing something a little different. You want to make
clarinet
sure.
Clarinet 2 is totally different from clarinet 1.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would even, if you have the ability to divide your group brass and woodwinds, this is a piece that I think could really benefit from, you know, independent time with the woodwind section and the brass section before you put it together. Otherwise, it really can just sound noisy.
Yeah. And you want the moving eighth notes to be brought out as often as possible. And that this is a good opportunity to teach your students that too. So if they do have a couple little moments, like in the low brass, they have some eighth notes here and there, like in response to the trumpet melody, for instance, at measure 10, they have 1, 2, and 3, and 4, and the trumpets just have a long note on top of them. So that's a musical idea that you can teach students about how composers like to do that as you transition into the next section. And then at 11, they're continuing on with the melody. Horns come in as well with a counter melody, but there are some accidentals.
Lots of accidentals in this section.
Yeah,
lots.
So it goes and adds in like some concert A flats. And then those continue on for quite a bit of time. The flutes and the clarinet one has now also added in with the trumpet. But the low people are still just kind of chilling in the background. We've got harmony parts and clarinet. Nobody is resting. Like, the entire band is playing. Mm-hmm. So like Laura mentioned, like, you want to make sure you spend a lot of time talking about the role of your instrument in this piece. And are you the melody? And if not, back off. One other thing I like to do sometimes is, like, in my non-varsity band, is sometimes say, like, first chairs play, you know, or like, we're not doing chairs right now in that group, but like when we used to, or you can say, eighth graders, why don't you play this time? And it kind of just gives the kids the sense of like, oh, that's what it's supposed to sound like. You know, it's not supposed to be overly, you know, when composers write music, they don't write for 9 flutes, they write like for one on a part.
Right.
And does it sound cool, you know? So that's something else to just kind of keep in mind, is you may have to say, okay, well, you're going to maybe not play this one measure because it's too noisy, or you can come in after that, you know, and do what works best for your group.
Absolutely.
But this piece can definitely come across as too much in your face if you're not careful. We continue on with the upper people having the melody, and then at the end of their melody, they have a little trill, and then the lows have another response with accents 2, 3, and 4, 1, and then they have a long note with some percussion doing a little. It sounds like a round, like what's that? What's like a drum line?
Roll off.
It kind of sounds like that there to me, and I'm like, oh, it's kind of like a little marching band. It's because it's triumphant, and then the bells come in all by themselves.
Yeah. One, two, three, four, and two.
And they have their own little moment. Like, you have to have them.
You do. And this is another moment right here where I think the mallet choice for bells is really important.
Otherwise, it
can sound really, really, peeny and not good. As we transition into this new section at 22, the melody goes into the clarinet and alto. It's even cued in the horn.
More mellow.
Exactly. Not as fast technique. We don't have a lot of eighth note technique. There's more slurs involved in this point, in this section. More woodwind feature here. It's cued in a lot of the brass, but more woodwind feature with tuba here. And he uses a lot of dynamics in this. Katie talked about the forte piano crescendos at the beginning of the piece. There are those forte piano crescendos, and like in this section, almost like a hairpin dynamic feeling in this little section here at 22. So lots of opportunities to kind of get your kids to come out of their shell dynamically and musically and be a little bit more expressive.
The flute and oboe have that little eighth note-y response to the melody in the clarinet and sax. And they have like 2, 3, and 4, and 1, 2, and then they have a little trill. And then the horns come back with the melody with the altos. They continue on, and then the flutes have a little response. So it's kind of like a little conversation between them a little bit. And the trumpets are not playing.
And
so that's good. They get a little bit of a break.
If your horns didn't play the cues earlier, then this is the first time we're getting that horn color in the melody as well, which I personally like. Now, the bells are continuing their same little ostinato throughout this whole section. This is another section where I think it can get noisy sounding if they are not being they can't be mindless when they're going through and playing this. They have to make sure that their ears are open and they are constantly
it's just a
listening.
Small layer.
That's exactly right. They're constantly listening for the melody as well.
Then we have in measure 28 a dotted quarter note, eighth note rhythm, I think.
It's the first time we've seen it.
One of the first times in the piece, yeah. So everybody has that rhythm, or in the melody, I guess I should say. And then horn and tenor sax have this little one and two and three, like a little mini scale. It comes back later in the piece too. So it kind of sounds like we're triumphing the, or like, you know, telling them that the trumpets are coming back, and then the trumpets come back in. So they have the melody, but split parts again. So second trumpet is also still important for that harmony.
And riddled with more accidentals here.
Oh, lots more accidentals.
Right.
Yeah, we have concert A flat. We
G
have
flat,
concert G
flat.
Yeah, lots of them in the low brass part, in the low reeds part. So fifth position is something you're going to have to really get friendly with in the low brass. Yeah. So this piece, it can be a little bit tricky because you're going to have to work on it in little chunks, just harmonically, to make sure it sounds exactly right and the chords are lining up. Lots of movement. The flute and the oboe have four and one and two and three and four. So they have another little cutesy moment. And then the trumpets are continuing the melody, and there's lots of pickup notes in some of the accompaniment parts. You want to bring the pickup note out, but let the half notes not be as strong.
And this happens a lot in this piece where I feel like the end of a phrase overlaps with the beginning of another phrase.
Oh, sure.
And it's really common for younger players who are ending the phrase to drop it the second that they hear the new phrase start, and that should not happen.
Well, or that's where they take a breath.
Right,
and then
exactly.
There's like
yeah.
a huge gap. So this would be another great spot to say, you're not allowed to breathe there, because if you do, there's a gap before the horn comes in or whatever. Yeah. So you can plan out breath marks where kids are going to play somewhere else in your marked parts ahead of time. You can mark the breath marks for, like, make the trombones breathe in one measure, make the euphoniums breathe in a different measure. So that way it kind of balances itself out. And then it just keeps going with these accidentals for quite a bit of time.
The snare drum comes back in. Snare has been kind of laying out here while the bells were doing their thing. Snare comes back in here. The part is a little bit less active for the wind players, but still lots of accidentals. Another dynamic opportunity where we have the whole ensemble crescendoing to a forte and then immediately dropping off to
two.
Piano,
yeah.
Where we start layering an entrance where we're building one, two, and three, four, and one, two, and three more. People are adding in. So you're getting that automatic crescendo by the addition of instrumentation.
Yep.
But that this section is real important. Make sure you all articulate the same, because we have unison rhythm in a lot of the sections. And we're just building texture to get to measure 39.
At 39, we have an entrance on beat one with a little trill in the upper woodwinds. And I would 100% take it down to one on a part on this trill, because it can be like way
shrill.
Too much. It's a upper, not an upper C on clarinet, but a third space C and an upper B flat on the flutes. So, and a B flat in the oboe. It just could be a lot. So maybe either they play it really quiet or one on a part. And the lows come in on beat one as well. Then the trumpets and the alto and clarinet two come in on beat three, and then low brass plays on beat four. So another little kind of stacking moment. Nobody on beat two, but it's got a cool effect to it.
It's really cool. And that would be something I would practice bopped.
Mm-hmm.
Like I would, so that everyone can clearly hear when the new instrument comes in.
Yep. And then at measure 40, the low brass have a new rhythm, one and four. So just teaching them to articulate that and accent the and, so it really jumps out, is a good thing to spend some time on. Then you have these quarter notes that are accented going up. It's that same mini scale that the horns had before, except instead of eighth notes, it's now quarter notes and it's accented. The horns have it as well with them. So that's a cool little counter melody part that I think should be brought out. Then one measure later, the low brass have four accented quarter notes, so they're kind of doing it in response. And then the full band has one, two, and three, and four. And then we're back to the same entrances on beat one and
that
three
staggered
and four.
Entrance. Yeah,
yep,
we repeat
again.
That exact same thing with the trills in the upper woodwinds. Well, you can tell that we're just kind of building towards the end. We see our first little moment of staccato notes here around measure 45. So we have some staccato staccatos and accents. And the staccatos are written only in the upper voices here. So you hear it in the trumpet, the flute, clarinet, alto. Low voices do not have those written. So I would be real intentional about observing that and making sure that that is played exactly how it's written. Another forte piano crescendo. So because we have so many of these in this, that would be something I would practice in my daily drill. Mm-hmm. Like, let's take a concert F and we're going to practice, you know, this forte piano crescendo in our daily drill regularly so that you get it when it's across the whole ensemble like this, or most of the ensemble. It's got to be balanced. You don't want anyone sticking out of the texture. You've got to talk about the intonation and how it affects tuning when they crescendo like that. So, you know, apply that to your daily drill.
And I talk to students on forte pianos about numbers. Like, we'll talk about the dynamic number system. I do like 1 to 10. And like, we never play 10 and we never play 1 because I don't think that middle school kids can necessarily handle playing a 10 or a 1. So this would be a perfect moment where you could say the forte piano should be like a 7 to a 3. And then on the next beat, go up to 4. And on the next beat, a 5. And then you end on 6. So it kind of gives the kids like a number system to think about where they're not, like Lara said, crescendoing more than their neighbor and sticking out of the ensemble, or like, well, it says crescendo, so I'm just going to play really loud, you know.
What we use, I use the number system like Katie does too. I use that same thing. I also, like, every time we play forte crescendos, we talk about the word zoom. So the students will even write it on their part, or I'll write it on their part before I hand it out to them. But we say the word zoom. We talk about the Z at the beginning is the forte, and I make the whole ensemble say it and hold the M. So we go zoom. Zoom, we say it and then we play it and get them used to what, because the kids are not going to have a problem with the crescendo. They're going to have a problem with the piano.
Right.
They can do the forte and they can do the crescendo. It's the piano part. Yep. So we use that word zoom and say it and play it and then add that numbering system like Katie talked about.
And then at 49, we have the upper woodwinds again with some fun little doodly eighth notes, just like the beginning. Trumpets have the melody again. And then, like I mentioned before, we get that little horn mini scale at the very end. 1 and 2 and 3, 1. And the whole band ends on beat 1 of the last measure. You will want to make sure that you end that with a ta articulation, so it has a little bit of length. It is an accented note, but lots of accidentals here at the end too, just like before. So this piece is, I would definitely say, like a 1.5.
Yeah, I agree.
Plus. Just because it's thickly textured.
It is.
Nobody's resting very often, you know. Yeah. It's pretty much like active the whole time. But it's short, you know. So if you're willing to go into that great detail and work your way up in the speed process, then it'll be great.
I think it's got a lot of great learning opportunities for younger bands. And it would even be, Katie and I were talking, it would even be a fabulous piece for a varsity group to play at a fall concert. Yeah. You know, or at a patriotic ceremony or whatever. So it is a really good piece, challenging for the grade level that it is, but well worth it if you're willing to put in the time and effort.
Well, we hope you will consider programming Heroes Triumphant in the future. And thank you for joining us on this episode of
Band BFFs.